Court will proceed to the fifth case, North Star Partners versus Marsh Supermarkets. Mr. Waller.
Morning. May it please the court, my name is John Waller. I represent the appellant North Star Partners, the plaintiff below. We're here on a de novo appeal from the district court's rulings on cross motions for summary judgment in a commercial lease dispute. The issue of the question is simply involving how rent should be calculated in the second option period of the lease. The relief North Star Partners requests is that this court should reverse the district court as a matter of law and enter summary judgment in favor of North Star Partners on its two counts. One, that the declaratory judgment should be entered, in essence clarifying what the rent should now be. And number two, entering as a matter of law the amount of damages to which North Star Partners is currently entitled, which it's undisputed, that we're running at about $3,206 a month into the 34th month of the second option period. We're at about $109,000 at this point in time. The facts are undisputed. The case really focuses on the operative lease sections, which are sections 3B, 4A, and section 8. The theme of North Star Partners' case all along has been simply this: $3 per square foot means $3 per square foot. That is the language of section 3B in the lease. Section 3B in the lease naturally provides that the $3 per square foot means the existing or current square footage. The lease does not say anywhere that rent is $2.21 per square foot, which is what Marsh's position is. The lease does not say anywhere that rent shall be $8,940 per month, which is what Marsh's position is. The lease does not say anywhere that the expansion space should be occupied rent-free, which is what Marsh's position is in this case.
If you were to take off the addition, let's just say, and you stay at the 35,000 square feet, when you get down and refer to $3 per square foot, what would it be referring to?
If you were to take off the addition, it would be referring to the space occupied by Marsh, which would be the original space, 37,650 square feet.
Yeah, the whatever it is, I'd say 35,760. But the
that's right.
The because when we talk about the, they refer to the 373, and you point out that that's not exactly
correct.
373 per square foot when you divide it into the amount. But when we contemplate a $1.5 million addition, obviously it's a net lease of some kind. What was the original? Obviously, when you build a building, they pay the rent, and they also assume all the common areas.
Correct.
The percentage of the total property tax, insurance,
correct,
all that stuff.
Yes.
So it's this addition that's causing the confusion. And I just, if I were to take out that, if you were to take in from, I guess it's paragraph 4A, that the way, you have to read it one way or the other, but if you kept in the 35,760 when you got down to $3 per square foot, you're saying that's what would have to be done when you got into 3B? If 3B were to say, except that the rental provided in section 4A hereof shall be $3 per square foot, I guess you would say that it, for the 3,500, 700 square feet.
Are you saying if Marsh, if that's what Marsh really wanted when it drafted the lease?
I think that's the way Marsh reads it, and I'm wondering, you're saying that would have to be written in, I guess.
That's one way to handle it. Or Marsh could have written it that says rent beginning in option period 2 should be $8,940 per month. That would make it crystal clear.
Or your client could have made it crystal clear also. Say, in the addition, you pay rent on whatever you add on to.
Well, my client didn't draft the lease, but I guess my client's position would be section 3B's states it sufficiently clearly, and that is $3 per square foot means $3 per square foot.
I bet you the leases now take into account what happens if you put an addition on.
That may be the case. I'm not prepared to answer that. It should. Let me turn now quickly to some of the air.
And as I understand it, though, all the improvements that Marsh puts on at the end of the lease revert, and you become the owner.
Well, yes, it's our land, and the improvements were made presumably for the profit of Marsh, and that's true. And our land would be restricted somewhat as opposed to having an outlot that could be used to generate income for other purposes. And to go back to another point about the CAM charges, in this case, the CAM charges show the lease in action, and that is once the space was expanded, Marsh's CAM charges went up, and they paid their pro rata share of the CAM charge. So our position would be that the rent is no different. The language in the lease is no different, so the rent should also go up.
Well, the CAM charges impact everybody in the area. And that's why it's called common. And if it impacts everybody, then it's according to whatever, I guess, square footage is being maintained, whatever the common area maintenance consists of. I don't know whether that expansion would expand the effort. I don't know. But that's the theory anyway.
Well, the facts are that the expansion was to the east or the left of the original box, so there isn't any other common area over there other than what Marsh would occupy as the land. And my other point escapes me. Oh, and the critical point is, while it may be more easy to understand the CAM charge or rationalize that the CAM charges should be different, the fact is if you read the lease, the language is no different because it's dependent upon what constitutes the demised premises or the demise square footage. So while it may be easier to grasp, the language in the lease, which is what governs the case, treats the two identically. The district court erred right off the top of its analysis and based its decision on a false premise, and that is the demise premises includes the property built by the lessor. Section 1 simply does not say that. In fact, Sections 1 and 8 say that the demise premises can constitute that part of the project built by Marsh. And why that's important is because the original square footage is not frozen in time forever at the original square footage. It's not a term of the lease that can never change. In fact, it does change as the lease goes on into Option 2. As a result of that, rent must be paid on all of the existing square footage. It must be paid on all of the demise premises, or the not demise storeroom, which is where we are in Option 2 at this time. The district court also, I mean this respectfully, I think crossed the line between using common sense to read the lease, and they went into what I would phrase business sense, or they make business judgments. I'm going to stop there and reserve the rest of my time for a moment. Thank you.
Thanks, Lord. Mr. Blakelock?
May it please the court, Rich Blakelock on behalf of the appellee Marsh Supermarkets. Marsh would request that the court affirm the district court's ruling in which it held that the subject lease terms are unambiguous and Marsh does not have to pay rent on square footage reserved for Marsh and that Marsh built on at Marsh's own expense. North Star Partners was not around in 1977 when this shopping center was developed, when the initial lease was entered into. North Star wasn't around in 1990 and 1991 when Marsh spent at that time over $1.5 million to add over 12,000 square feet to what ultimately became North Star's property. And yet years later, North Star is before the court asking for what the district court characterized as a lopsided and profitable interpretation of the lease. The district court agreed with Marsh that the interpretation sought by North Star leads to a result that doesn't comply with common sense and is absurd, and that is that Marsh is to build and ultimately leave for North Star over 12,000 square feet, pay rent on that square footage that it built at the same rate that Marsh pays rent on square footage built by North Star's predecessor.
This was a Marsh form that was used to work this out, wasn't it?
Well, in some sense, yes, but I think it's important to note that the form was used in a prior deal with the same people, Speedway Plaza Associates. Speedway Plaza Associates then approached Marsh with this deal using that form and with its notations on it with some changes. So what the district court said is that although it does contain some terms that Marsh had drafted, Speedway Plaza Associates back in 1977, by using that form and presenting it to Marsh, adopted those terms in essence as its own. There's three reasons why the court should affirm the district court's ruling, the first of which is that Marsh's and the district court's ruling harmonizes all of the provisions within the four corners of the agreement. Second is that the ruling is consistent with common sense. And third, North Star's version of the interpretation requires the court to ignore some terms and inject other terms where none currently exist. To the first point, the first place to look as to what consequences there will be upon an expansion is the provision in the lease dealing with expansion, and that is Section 8. And it expressly says that no terms will change due to a modification of the lease, or I'm sorry, modification of the premises, a modification done at Marsh's own expense. The second place, then, is to look is the rental provision, which under the title rental is 4A. And that sets out a rental formula of, at the time, $3.73 times 35,760 square feet, which if you extrapolate it out, you get the annual rent and the monthly rent. The third place to look then is, well, what happens to the rental in the second option? And that's set forth in Part 3B of the lease. And it says that during the second through fourth option terms, all the provisions in the lease will be the same except the rental in 4A, which would be $3 per square foot. What the district court held, and the plain reading of this document requires, is that you plug in the $3 from Section 3B into the formula in 4A, the rental provided in 4A. If you take $3 times 35,760 square feet, you arrive at what Marsh is paying and has been paying since November of 2002. As an example, if this expansion had occurred after the second option period had been exercised, at that point in time, Marsh would have expanded at its own expense. Section 8 says no expansion changes any terms of this lease. As North Star would have it, what Marsh would have to do immediately would be to pay rent on the space that it just built. Well, that's a changing term, and the term that changes is the multiplier of square footage from 35,000 plus to 48,000 plus. So it simply does not work. Second point is that Marsh's position is consistent with common sense and doesn't lead to an absurd result, as the district court noted. It's important to note that Marsh, in the original lease in 1977, had reserved space that it could expand on. North Star had no right to use that space. They've put in their briefs, we're in the business of collecting rent. Well, after they signed that lease, they weren't in the business of collecting rent on that square footage because Marsh had it, and Marsh to this day could have sat on that space and never expanded on it, in which case North Star would get exactly what it's getting today, which is nothing. As the district court said, it's absurd to conclude that Marsh would build an expansion left for North Star over $1.5 million at which it would pay rent, have the privilege of paying rent, at the same price that it's paying rent for space built by North Star's predecessors. There's no cost to North Star for this because it couldn't use that land. To the extent there's additional expenses imposed on North Star, that's covered by the real estate real estate tax, insurance, and CAM charges, and those adjust accordingly. There's only a benefit to North Star. At the end of this term, it gets 12,824 square feet of additional square footage.
Well, they obviously they wouldn't write the contract if they were doing it. And the question is the one we have, and I guess we go back to this 4A, you're saying that essentially we should substitute where it says or $3.73, you should plug in $3 there?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And, of course, if you put in $3 there, if you back up, all those other numbers are incorrect. I guess that they're slightly incorrect now.
Right.
The 373, but very slight, and but because that's what would have to happen, or else you'd have to take the on 35,760 square feet of the storeroom and transpose that into 3B and put that after $3 a square foot. I guess I mean that's the, it's one way or the other. You have to read that in one way or the other. Now, without that, you point out that if there's no addition, there's not going to be any change. And then I guess you're going to rely on 8, where it says two places at this its own expense to redecorate, refurbish, alter, or enlarge, and then no such addition or alteration or remodeling shall cause for the modification. And you would say the modification means increase in rent, I guess.
That's right, a modification of the term being the multiplier against which the square foot rate applies.
Mm-hmm.
And I would also add, just for the court, the in regard to the $3.73 and the fact that the dollar figures would have to be changed, I guess, in the second through fourth period, the dollar figures have to be there because there has to be some result of the formula being square feet times per square foot price. And I'll also note that the notion that this is a flat fee lease, in other words, Section 4 is just a flat fee, requires the court to ignore all that language in which it says that the dollar figure or the annual rent is represented by, you know, this number and also by this formula. And finally, the draft that of the lease that Northstar gave to Marsh only has square feet and $3 on it, and then it has a little notation to fill in the other figure later. So it's not like the dollars came first and the square foot later. It's just a rounding error, and certainly no rounding error to impose such a huge obligation on Marsh. The last point is Northstar's version of this interpretation requires the court to ignore certain language and inject language where it doesn't exist. There's a reference in 3B that says, to the rental provided for in 4A. Well, that rental provided for in 4A is the formula. And Northstar, as it started out its argument, saying this is just square feet, $3 per square foot. Well, against what? It does, and that's the issue. The answer to that issue is 35,760 square feet in 4A. The court would also have to ignore the reference in 4A to $3.73 per square foot on 35,760 square feet of storeroom, which is what Northstar has argued is inconsequential or surplusage. And finally, the multiplier in 3B, where none exists. The court would have to inject in this square foot multiplier. What are we multiplying $3 against? Well, you look again to 4A, it's 35,760 square feet. And that's what the district court said is the most natural reading of this, which leads a commonsensical result. And with that, we would ask that the court affirm the ruling of the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Palela.
Thank you.
Mr. Waller?
The result is not, I would respectfully suggest, improbable or preposterous to suggest. Just one telling detail. 25 years into the lease, based upon Northstar's reading the lease, rent is only up a total of 9%. That's 25 years into the lease. Factoring in inflation, I don't even know if there would be an increase.
But that's what it would be if there was no addition put on, too, right?
Pardon me?
That's the lease would the payments would be the same if there was no addition put on, right?
Yes, that's right.
So why is that unusual?
Well, reading the lease as a whole, an important point I would recommend is that the parties anticipated and expected there would be expansion. And that the lease was designed to be flexible for this. All throughout the lease, and as pointed out in our brief, the lease was designed to be flexible. So the section governing option 2 is a function, it's a formula in which the square footage, we would state, is a variable to be plugged into the formula to reach that result. If I could just mention, I'm not going to be an apologist for the lease. North Star Partners' predecessor didn't draft it. The lease could be regarded as being ambiguous. The district court erred by not applying what the Woodbridge Court called the cardinal rule in Indiana, and as that is, the lease has to be strictly construed against its drafter. That was not done in this case. The reasoning was tainted, and the conclusion was flawed, we suggest. The consequences should be suffered on Marsh's part as to any ambiguity in the lease. The lease does not say rent should be $8,940 per month. It doesn't say that. We've never heard an explanation as to why it couldn't have been written that crystal clear. There's an ambiguity there. Marsh should not be entitled to take advantage of that ambiguity.
Thank you, Mr. Waller. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.